Surveillance data analysis. Data must be organized and compiled into a format useful for analysis and decision-making. In this way, data provides frontline personnel with the information about infection prevention trends necessary for improving IPC practices, such as HH, environmental cleaning and disinfection protocols, and PP use. An important consideration underlying the usefulness of data is whether or not the data can be considered valid or not. Validity is the degree to which a measurement, test, study, or other data collection method actually measures or detects what it is intended to measure. It is important to ensure that the data collected during surveillance and outbreak investigations is validated. In terms of activities in LTC settings, this simply means ensuring that data is formulated accurately and calculated correctly. Provided the information is considered valid, the IP should share their findings with relevant stakeholders throughout the surveillance process, not only at the end of the surveillance program, but also during the course of the program. This may happen on request, at prearranged times and briefings, or when a change arises that necessitates an adjustment to the surveillance program. Turning raw data into comprehensible and actionable information is an essential component of any IP's responsibilities. A considerable amount of data may be gathered, depending on the scope of the surveillance program and the size of the healthcare facility, and presenting it to stakeholders in its raw form is an ineffective way to convey findings. Statistical measurements commonly used in healthcare surveillance programs include measures of central tendency, mean, median and mode, dispersion, range, deviation, variance and standard deviation, and frequency, rates, ratios, and proportions, as well as percentiles. For LTC facilities, the most useful measurements are those of frequency, commonly referred to simply as rates. Key point: data is only useful if it can be turned into actionable information. IPs must become familiar with the various methods for data analysis. Types of statistics. There are two types of statistics: descriptive and inferential. Descriptive statistics provides numerical information about variables. In simple terms, it uses numbers to describe the characteristics of a data set. Inferential statistics makes an assumption, an inference, about a population based on a sample or calculates the strength of the association between cause and effect. The CDC refers to the 5 W's of descriptive epidemiology, which are used to help identify, collect, and organize relevant data. What? Health issue/event of concern or diagnosis. Who? Demographic data related to population affected. Where? Any place and/or geographic location relevant to disease occurrence. When? Disease occurrence over time or at specific times. Why? How? Causes, risk factors, modes of transmission. Central tendency, populations, and distributions. Here are terms from the field of inferential statistics along with some comments on their use. The population is the set of all observations of interest to the investigator. These may be individuals, procedures, or any type of measurement. A sample is a group of observations selected from a population and chosen to represent the population as a whole. The values in a sample are those that are actually observed and measured by the researcher. The sample is used in inferential statistics to make assumptions about the population. Generally, the larger the sample, the stronger the inference and the less likely that the observed difference is due to chance alone. Small samples are more subject to error. A study to detect a slight difference or slight increase in disease risk with great precision will require more individuals than a study for less precise detection of large differences. Measures of central tendency describe how observations cluster around a middle value and locate only the center of a distribution measure. They include the following. The mean is the sum of all values divided by the total number of values, the average. For example, the mean of a group of numbers, 2, 4, 4, 6, 7, 19, would be the sum of the group, 2, 4, 4, 6, 7, 19 equals 42, divided by the number of values, 6. So for that group of numbers, the mean is 42 divided by 6 equals 7. The median is the midpoint of the observations, with half the observations falling above and half below the median value. Because the median is not affected by outliers, the median ignores extreme values. It may be a good approximation of an average. For example, using the same group of numbers as above, 2, 4, 4, 6, 7, 19, the median would fall between the third and fourth listed value. The calculation would then be 4 plus 6 divided by 2 equals 5. The mode is the observation that occurs most frequently in a data set, and it determines the height and shape of a curve. It should be noted, however, that data sets can be multimodal or even be non-modal. No value occurs more often than any other. The mode is not usually affected by outliers. Using the same set of numbers, 2, 4, 4, 6, 7, 19, the mode would be 4. The range provides a value that represents the difference between the highest and lowest values in a data set, but it does not say how many observations are in the data set. It is not a stable measure of dispersion, as it does not provide enough detail or specificity. For example, the range of the same set of numbers, 2, 4, 4, 6, 7, 19, is 17, but this could indicate a range from 1 to 18 or 10 to 27. Often, range is used for metrics such as temperatures or ages. The normal distribution, as seen in Exhibit 4-11, describes a bell-shaped curve on a graph in which the distribution, spread, of the values is even on both sides of the mean. Both halves are equal, and the mean, median, and mode are all equal. As sample size increases in number, the effects of the random influences are diminished and the data are closer to a normal distribution. Exhibit 4-11, a normal distribution. A sampling distribution is the distribution of the samples taken. If the sample size is low, the distribution is unlikely to be normal. Many types of distributions exist. For example, a distribution is not a normal distribution if it is asymmetrical. This is called skewness, meaning that extreme values tend to fall more in one direction than the other, and this curve looks more like a wave in one direction or the other, a positive or negative skew. Data sets with equal central tendency measures may tell very different stories if their distributions differ. For example, imagine that hand hygiene compliance audits are conducted over the course of a year for two different floors, A and B, in a healthcare facility. If both floors average 50% compliance for the year, it does not necessarily indicate that both perform the same, nor does it indicate that they would both benefit from the same or similar interventions. The difference between the floors might be more accurately reflected in the range of the results. That is, if floor A had a steady 50% compliance rate for the entire year while floor B had compliance rates ranging from 15% to 85%, then floor B may require more or different interventions than floor A. Measures of dispersion. After finding measures of central tendency, the next step is to measure data dispersion. Measures of dispersion give information about the distribution of data around the mean. Range, deviation, variance, and standard deviation are the four most commonly used measures of dispersion in healthcare epidemiology. Range, as previously discussed, is the largest value minus the smallest value. Range is both a measure of central tendency and a measure of dispersion. For example, if floor A in an LTC facility identified a single resident with influenza, while floor B identified 8, then the range would be 1 to 8. However, the range does not indicate how many observations are in the data set, and so it would not give information about the relative size of the different floors or how frequently residents were checked on each floor. Deviation is the difference between an individual value in a data set and the mean value. If a given data point is greater than the mean, it has a positive deviation. If it is less than the mean, the data point has a negative deviation. When data points are equal to the mean, they have no deviation. Variance is the deviation around the mean of a distribution. Standard deviation is a measure that reflects the distribution of values around the mean. It is the average of all deviations in a data set and indicates how spread out the data are around the mean. A small standard deviation indicates that the data cluster tightly around the mean, that is, most data fall relatively close to the average with few, if any, outliers. A large value indicates that the data are spread out more widely, with more possible outliers or a larger range. Exhibit 4-12 shows standard deviation with a normal distribution. Exhibit 4-12. Standard deviation in a normal distribution. Consider again the hand hygiene compliance example from earlier, in which floor A had a consistent 50% compliance rate while floor B had a range of 15% to 85%. In that situation, floor A has a smaller standard deviation than floor B. Measures of frequency. Rates, ratios, and proportions are among the most useful measurements for IPs working in healthcare facilities. A ratio is a comparison of any two quantitative values. A proportion is a specific kind of ratio that compares a part to the whole. A rate is a specific kind of ratio that includes a unit of time and provides information about how fast events are occurring. Rates, ratios, and proportions are used to measure the occurrence and risk of an event in a specific population during a given time period. By converting data to ratios, the IP may more accurately compare them to benchmarks, goals, or events at other facilities. This information should be shared with the interdisciplinary team to help guide decision-making and action plans. When calculating infection rates, the numerator, upper portion of a fraction, is the number of residents with a specific infection, and the denominator, lower portion of a fraction, must accurately reflect the population at risk. For example, in calculations related to indwelling urinary catheters, the denominator will refer to the population or group of residents who are at risk for CAUTS, all residents with urinary catheters. In calculations relating to central line-associated bloodstream infections, CLABSIUS, it will be those residents who are at risk for CLABSIUS, all residents with central venous catheters. It is possible that, during certain outbreaks, influenza or tuberculosis, for example, all healthcare facility residents, HCP, and visitors should be factored into the denominator. Denominator data must be collected by trained personnel. When denominator data are available from electronic databases, these sources may be used as long as the counts are not substantially different from those collected manually. Ratios. Ratios are based on this simple formula. After the numerator is divided by the denominator, the result is often expressed as the result to 1 or written as the result 1. For example, if over a 12-month period 8 residents in a healthcare facility develop CAUTS, 6 males and 2 females, then the ratio would be 3 males to 1 female, because 6 divided by 2 equals 3, which can be expressed as 3, 1. The numerator X and the denominator Y represent the two groups being compared. The multiplier, 10n, is used to transform the result into a number that is larger than 1, or, in some formulas, if 100 is used as the multiplier, into a percentage. It is read as 10 to the nth power, and the resulting value for 10n when calculated may be 1, 10, 0, 10, 10-1, 100, 10-2, 1,000, 10-3, etc. For 10n, any value of n can be used. For most nationally notifiable diseases, a value of 100,000 or 10-5 is used for 10n. Otherwise, it is common to select a value for 10n so that the smallest rate calculated in a series yields a number greater than or equal to 1. For example, 4.2/100, not 0.42/1000, and 9.6/100,000, not 0.96/1,000,000. Numerators and denominators can be related, influenza cases and influenza deaths, or unrelated, number of apples consumed per day and number of physician visits. Standard infection ratio, SIR. Standardized infection ratios, SIRS, are used by the CDC's National Healthcare Safety Network, NHSN, to track HAIs over time at the regional, national, or facility level. Unfortunately, not enough LTC facilities of different sizes and resident populations routinely report into NHSN. When the data are robust enough to make SIRS useful, they will be reported for LTC in the same way they are reported for acute care. As IPs may come across the term, it is worthwhile to understand what it is and how it is calculated. It should be noted, though, that it is an additional surveillance measure. It should not replace incidence, prevalence, or attack rates. Here is the formula for calculating the SIR. Here's how to interpret the results of SIR calculation. If SIR equals 1, then there were as many infections as expected. If SIR less than or equal to 1, then there were fewer infections than expected. This suggests that the facility has prevented infections. If SIR are greater than or equal to 1, then there were more infections than expected. This suggests that the facility has experienced an increase in infections. Proportions. Proportions are ratios that show the percentage of a population that suffered from an infection or other adverse event. Proportions compare a part to the whole. It is a type of ratio in which the numerator is included in the denominator. Returning to the earlier example, the formula for calculating the proportion of female residents that contracted CAUTS would be 2 divided by 8 equals 0.25 and 0. Multiplied by 100 equals 25%. Therefore, female residents comprise 25% of the CAUTI-S identified during this 12-month period. Rates. Rates measure an event's occurrence bound by a specific time frame. Rates are a measure of risk. The time frame is frequently the cumulative person time that the population was at risk within a specified time period or the number of device days. Rates are especially important because they can be used to track trends and monitor changes in the frequency of specific events among residents. It is important to note that rates must always be represented in the same number of units, as this allows for comparisons between different time periods. It also makes rates easier to comprehend. The number of units will depend on the size and complexity of the facility in which they are used, but they are typically expressed as rates per 1,000 units. For example, consider a situation in which 3 CAUTI-S occur in the Medical Intensive Care Unit, MICU, during the first quarter of the year, numerator, and there are 38 total residents with urinary catheters in the MICU during the same time period, denominator equals people at risk. This fraction is then multiplied by a constant 10n to calculate the rate. Here we will use 10^3, or 1,000, as the constant, which leads to 3 divided by 38 equals 0. Multiplied by 1,000 equals 78.9 CAUTI/1,000 urinary catheter days. Key point: calculating ratios, proportions, and rates is an important part of any surveillance program, as these measurements help transform raw data into actionable information. Rates can be presented and calculated as crude, that is unadjusted, and risk-adjusted. Crude assumes that risk factors are evenly distributed for all events, cannot be used for comparisons of inter- and intra-facility rates. It may take the form of the number of new cases or deaths occurring in a specified population per year, usually expressed as the number of cases per 100,000 in the population at risk. Risk-adjusted assumes that risk factors are not evenly distributed for all events. Controlled based on variations can be used for comparisons of inter- and intra-facility rates. An example of a risk-adjusted measure is the NHSN Standardized Infection Ratio, SIR. Many IPs and hospital administrators prefer risk-adjusted rates to other summary HAI measures as a means for describing HAI incidents in their facility and for making comparisons between their hospital and national HAI data. By using risk-adjusted rates, a hospital can establish how their infection rates compare with the national baseline. While risk-adjusted rates can help IPs make comparisons with national rates and those of similar facilities, regionally or nationally, these rates do have an important limitation. Due to the potentially large number of diverse resident care locations, the data collected can be difficult to summarize. Therefore, it might be difficult to draw accurate or appropriate conclusions. This can make internal quality evaluation and external comparisons difficult if based solely on risk-adjusted rates. Prevalence and incidence. Commonly used rates in surveillance programs are incidence and prevalence. Historical incidence rates, the number of new cases, and prevalence rates, the total number of existing cases, serve as baselines for ongoing data analysis. Note that prevalence and incidence are often confused with each other. Prevalence includes all cases present regardless of onset date. Incidence includes only new cases within the surveillance time period. Prevalence measures the occurrence of existing cases, old and new, in a specific population during a given time period. The prevalence rate is calculated using the following formula. Prevalence can be presented in two different ways, both of which use the above formula, point prevalence and period prevalence. Point prevalence refers to the proportion of a population with existing cases at a given point of time. Example, the proportion of residents with a disease on a given day. Period prevalence is defined as the proportion of a population with existing cases during a specified period of time. Example, the proportion of residents with a disease in a given month. IPs reviewing prevalence measures should look carefully at what data are included. For example, two methods are acceptable. Only active cases of HAI are included for the time period, making it more nearly reflect incidence, or all HAIs are included whether they are active or inactive, regardless of date of onset. There are a couple of things to note with regard to prevalence. First, there are only two outcomes for prevalent cases, death or curing of the disease. Second, prevalence is influenced by both incidence and the average duration of the disease. Key ways in which incidence and duration of disease may affect prevalence include the following. As incidence increases, so does prevalence. If incidence of a disease remains constant, but the rate of death from the disease decreases, that is, more cases are cured, then prevalence will decline. If incidence of a disease remains constant, but the lives of prevalent cases are prolonged, not cured, then prevalence will rise. There are two types of incidence: incidence proportion, cumulative incidence, and incidence rate, incidence density. Incidence proportion is defined as the number of new cases of a disease that develop in a population at risk during a specified time period. In order to be able to interpret rates, one will need to know how they are calculated. When calculating an incidence proportion, the IP should compare the number of new cases or events, the numerator, with the size of the population at risk during the identified time period, the denominator. The formula for calculating an incidence proportion is: for surveillance in healthcare facilities, the selection of a denominator may depend on a couple of different factors. For example, if a facility does not have a stable population during the time period being considered, then the IP should take either the average population observed during the time period or the cumulative person time the population was at risk. In a second instance, the denominator would be calculated by adding together the time each person was at risk during the specified time period. There are multiple concepts that are related to the concept of incidence proportion, including attack rate, risk, cumulative incidence, and probability of developing disease. The incidence rate incorporates the amount of actual time at risk for each person rather than assuming that each case was at risk for the entire time period being studied. It is calculated using the following formula. An example would be the number of new cases of catheter-related UTIs, numerator, divided by the time at risk, which would be device days. Incidence rates are typically used in cohort studies of diseases with long incubation or latency periods, such as chronic diseases and occupationally acquired diseases, or when people are not followed up on for the same length of time. Like any rate, the incidence rate is expressed as a change per unit of time. It is the most commonly used metric in LTC facilities. For example, the number of new UTIs in a month is an incidence rate. Attack rates and mortality rates. Related to incidence and prevalence are the concepts of attack rate and mortality rate. An attack rate is the proportion of persons at risk who become infected over an entire period of exposure or a measure of the risk or probability of becoming a case. The attack rate measures the frequency of cases during an outbreak and represents the risk of acquiring a disease during an outbreak. In hospital epidemiology, attack rates are used to describe the probability of acquiring an HAI during hospitalization. An attack rate is a kind of incidence proportion. It is generally useful in describing the size of an outbreak. Attack rates are usually expressed as cases per 100 people or as a percentage. Attack rates are calculated as follows. Note that in the above equation, the value in the numerator is included in the denominator, as any new cases during the period arose in someone who was at risk during that period. Here's an example. 24 residents on a memory care unit in a long-term care facility are diagnosed with influenza, and there are 52 residents in the unit. The attack rate can be calculated as 24/52 by 100 equals 46.15 or 46.15%. A mortality rate is a measure of the frequency of death in a defined population during a specified time, usually a year. The crude mortality rate measures the proportion of the population dying each year from all causes. The cause-specific mortality rate measures mortality from a specified cause for a population. Mortality rates are typically expressed as deaths per 100,000 people. Below is the formula used to calculate mortality rate. Interpreting confidence intervals. Inferential statistics makes assumptions about a population based on a small sample size. The intent is to show an association between cause and effect. Example, development of pneumonia and being on a ventilator. Calculations can show the strength of the association between the cause and the effect, but cause can never be statistically proven. There are only methods to validate the strength of the association. Inferential statistics relies on probability, the laws of chance. A sample mean, X bar, is an estimate of the population mean. It is a point estimate that may include some error. To compensate for this margin of error, a calculation is performed to identify a range of possible values the population mean might take. This range is known as the confidence interval, CI. To calculate a CI, the data must have a normal distribution. The researcher determines what level of confidence to select. The most common confidence levels are 90%, 95%, and 99%. A 95% confidence interval can be interpreted as a range of values above and below the point estimate within which the true value in the population is likely to lie with 95% confidence. The other 5% is the possibility that the true value is not within the confidence interval. As sample size increases, the confidence interval becomes more precise. For example, if a report says that a 95% CI equals 177 pounds plus minus 5.5 pounds for a study monitoring obesity in a given population, we can be 95% confident that the population mean, or average weight, falls between 171.5 and 182.5 pounds. Measures of strength of association. A common use of statistics is hypothesis testing. Statistical significance is used to determine how much reliance to place on the results. Hypothesis testing starts with a statement of expected results. It uses the distribution of a known area in the normal distribution curve and estimates the likelihood, probability, that a result did not occur by chance. First, a research or alternate hypothesis is formulated. The hypothesis states the expectation to be tested. For example, Dr. A has a higher surgical site infection, SSI, rate than does Dr. B. Then a statement that is opposite to the research or alternate hypothesis is developed. For example, Dr. A has a lower SSI rate than does Dr. B. The latter is called the null hypothesis. The HO is always stated to be rejected. The research or alternate hypothesis, HA, is the desired result. Only two outcomes are possible with hypothesis testing. The null hypothesis is accepted or rejected. Statistical significance can be expressed as a question such as, is chance or sampling variation a likely explanation for the difference between a sample statistic and the corresponding null hypothesis population value? Statistically significant. If the answer to the question is no, it means that the observed difference is not likely to occur by chance variation and the sample result is not compatible with the null hypothesis and therefore is statistically significant. The null hypothesis is rejected because there is sufficient evidence to support that sampling variation or chance is an unlikely explanation for the difference between HO and sample values. This does not prove that the research hypothesis is true. Not statistically significant. If the answer to the question is yes, it means that the difference is likely to occur by chance alone, and this sample result is compatible with the null hypothesis and therefore is not statistically significant. The null hypothesis is not rejected. There is not sufficient evidence that sampling variation is the likely explanation for the difference between HO and sample values. The statisticians preparing the study will state the expected significance level of the test using the variable alpha. The level of significance is the probability value arbitrarily chosen by the researcher as the desired level of probability at which one may feel secure in rejecting the null hypothesis. This value is typically set at 0.05 or 0.01. Statistical significance can be measured using a p-value. A p-value is related to the sampling distribution. It helps calculate the probability of collecting a sample where the value of the test statistic is greater than or less than or equal to some specified value. The p-value is the probability of observing a sample in which the test statistic is greater than or equal to the test statistic for the sample that was actually observed. It is commonly compared to alpha, the specified significance level of the test. If alpha equals 0.05, then a p-value of less than or equal to 0.05 would cause you to reject the null hypothesis, and a p-value greater than 0.05 would cause you to fail to reject the null hypothesis. Reliability tests, sensitivity, and specificity. Reliability is a crucial input when determining what survey instrument should be used, as it refers to the extent to which a given instrument will yield the same results given consistent inputs across multiple trials. Reliability may be broken down into four main types. Test retest. This type of reliability describes to what extent a test will give consistent results over time. Inter-rater. This describes to what extent a test will achieve the same results if the individual running or conducting the test changes. Parallel forms. This measures how often distinct versions of a test, which are expected to be equivalent, return the same results. Internal consistency. This describes to what extent individual components of a study or test are consistent. Sensitivity and specificity are common statistical measures to describe diagnostic tests or the presence of disease and are related to the main types of hypothesis error. These measures affect the occurrence of type I and type II errors, which are described as follows. Type I error occurs when the null hypothesis is rejected when it is actually true or when significance is attributed when there actually is none. Type II error occurs when the null hypothesis is accepted when it is actually false or when significance is not attributed when it actually exists. Types I and II errors are inversely related. For example, if an error is arising due to sample size and the sample size is fixed, decreasing the risk of committing one error increases the risk of committing the other. Thus, they cannot be controlled at the same time. Sensitivity and specificity and two related measures influenced by them are defined as follows. Sensitivity, a measure of the probability that a test correctly identifies as positive persons who have a disease. Positive predictive value, PPV, a measure of the proportion of persons with a positive test who have a disease. Specificity, a measure of the probability that a test correctly identifies persons without a disease as negative. Negative predictive value, NPV, a measure of the proportion of persons without a disease who test negative. Key point, in order to remember the difference between sensitivity and specificity, a good rule of thumb is that a high sensitivity test is one where a negative result rules out the existence of a disease, and a high specificity test is one where a positive result confirms the existence of a disease. For example, if a diagnostic test has a high sensitivity, 95%, it should correctly detect the presence of a disease 95% of the time, and the false negative rate would be low, at 5%. In contrast, if a diagnostic test has a high specificity, 95%, it should correctly identify the absence of a disease 95% of the time, and the false positive rate would be low, at 5%. PPV and NPV are influenced by the specificity and sensitivity of the screening test and by the prevalence of disease in the population, as shown in Exhibit 4-13. Each value is based on simple ratios related to the number of true positives, true negatives, false positives, or type I errors, or false negatives, or type II errors. Exhibit 4-13. Process for determining sensitivity and specificity of disease. Note that this is an example of a 2x2 table, sometimes written 2x2, which is a table with two outcome columns, example, disease and no disease, and two exposure rows, example, exposed and not exposed. Let's look at an example using a 2x2 table and calculate the sensitivity, PPV, specificity, and NPV for a given set of numbers. First, let's define the formulas for each calculation. A pharmaceutical company is researching a new rapid test to identify COVID-19. The company screens 405 individuals with a diagnosis of rule-out COVID-19. The actual prevalence within the population is 7, and the numbers produced from the test are as follows. True positive, 6. True negative, 378. False negative, 2. False positive, 40. Using those numbers, a 2x2 chart can be filled out as is shown in Exhibit 4-14. Exhibit 4-14, 2x2 chart for COVID-19 test reliability calculation. Using the formulas above, we can calculate each of the following. Sensitivity equals 6 divided by 6 plus 2 equals 6 divided by 8 equals 0.75 or 75%. Positive predictive value equals 6 divided by 6 plus 40 equals 6 divided by 46 equals 0.130 or 13.0%. Specificity equals 378 divided by 378 plus 40 equals 378 divided by 418 equals 0.904 or 90.4%. Negative predictive value equals 378 divided by 378 plus 2 equals 378 divided by 380 equals 0.995 or 99.5%. Key point. To help prevent confusion on which values or boxes of the 2x2 chart should be in the above calculations, a few observations may be useful. For each of the above formulas, only two of the four boxes in the 2x2 test are used as the numerator. The true positive, upper left box, and the true negative, lower right box. In each formula, the value used in the numerator is part of the calculation for the denominator. No formula uses values from more than two boxes. Note that the power of a test is its ability to detect a specified difference. Example, the probability of rejecting the null hypothesis when it is false. The greater the specified difference is to be detected, the more powerful a sample will be in its ability to reject a false null hypothesis. Other rates, ratios, and measures of association and their appropriateness. Now let's look at a few other ratios along with some information on when it would be appropriate for researchers to use them. Note that prevalence, incidence, and attack rates, all discussed previously, are the three most commonly used types of metrics in LTC facilities. Relative risk, RR. This is a measure of the strength of association used in prospective and experimental studies. It is appropriate for cohort studies. RR is the probability of developing a disease if the risk factor is present divided by the probability of developing the disease if the risk factor is not present. Odds ratio, or is the probability of having a particular risk factor if a condition or disease is present divided by the probability of having the risk factor if the disease or condition is not present. It is used for all types of studies with nominal data, but mostly for retrospective and cross-sectional studies. It is not appropriate to use with chronic diseases since it is a prevalence measure. Correlation. Correlation calculates the direction and magnitude of a relationship between two variables. Correlation calculates a value, R, which measures the degree of the relationship. The calculated values can range between +1 and -1. The closer R is to +/-1, the stronger the relationship. A positive correlation exists when as one variable increases, so does the other. Example, the longer a urinary catheter is in place, the greater the risk of developing a UTI. A negative correlation occurs when as one variable increases, the other decreases. Example, increased hand washing results in fewer infections. With a value of 0, there is no correlation, and values near 0 show weak association.